Hello and welcome to the Plant Paradigm Podcast, where we have inspiring conversations with amazing individuals from all around the world and look for ways to create a clean, green, and sustainable future for us, the planet, and all beings. I'm your host, Tom Simak, a fellow plant eater who strives to optimize every living ecosystem, passionate about looking after this beautiful floating rock we call home and all the lovely creatures that dwell among it. As I sit here in front of a microphone doing the intro, I am in front of a park, so you may hear some bird sounds in the background. But it is a quick reminder during this little podcast or video you are watching to get out in nature a little bit more, see that green, see those birds, that wildlife, and take a moment to just be grateful. And getting out is something that you can do in many ways, and one of them is riding a bike. And that's something our guest today is really good at. We are speaking with Sonia Looney. She's a keynote speaker, professional athlete, podcast host, and writer. Sonia is a huge advocate for the plant-based diet and a mental health warrior. She raced her mountain bike across the world in over 25 countries at the hardest endurance races in places like the Sahara Desert, Himalayas of Nepal, tropical jungles in Asia, the steeps of Mongolia, and the mountain ranges in Poland, and even became a world champion in 2015. She's a living destroyer of the saying, you can't be a top athlete on a plant-based diet. On this show, we debunked that myth time and time again over the years, but it's still amazing to see how people like Sonia have really crushed it. We'll be talking about mindset quite a lot today. Mindset is incredibly vital, and it's something we don't talk about a lot on the show, but at the end of the day, it is at the core of who we are, what we believe in, what we do, and why we do them. Amongst other things, mindset is really a vital point of our health. Yes, the diet is what we put in our body, and it allows us to function at hopefully an optimal level. But a lot of the times, it's mind over matter. And Sonia definitely loves to talk about that. And the power of mindset, as we know, and as athletes have to know, can make or break you, especially come race day. So I was really stoked to hear her perspective on the races that she has done, the mindset preparation on top of the training and physical exercise that she had to endure to go through that. Sonia is a new mom, and we talk about bringing up her son Bradley on a plant-based diet, how that conversation sparked, and what the feedback has been from the community at large, both vegan and non-vegan. And then, of course, I couldn't let her go without talking about mountain biking, something she's incredibly popular for and what she's a world champion in. We talk about tips for beginners and intermediates and finding ways to do it so that you can love it and really embrace mountain biking or any sport of your choosing with complete confidence and safety and the right mentality to go about things. But with that being said, I hope you enjoy this conversation between Sonia and I, and I'll see you on the other side. Sonia, welcome to the Plant Paradigm Podcast. How are you going?
I'm stoked to be here.
Very, very stoked to have you. How was your trip to Whistler?
It was nice getting away, just my husband and I, to do the thing that we love the most. Adventures on our mountain bikes was pretty awesome.
I haven't actually ever gone on a mountain bike, ever. So this will be a very interesting conversation coming, like asking you questions for someone who hasn't even explored on the trails. Are you still like scared of what, like, because there's rocks, there's certain dangers involved. And when you're going on trails that you don't necessarily know, how aware do you have to be of what's coming up?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Like any skill, you shouldn't be afraid when you're riding your bike, because that means you're riding on a trail that's above your skill level. So a lot of times people think, oh, how, like, you must be terrified riding these things. And if you're terrified, it just means that you shouldn't be out there on that particular trail. So basically, when you start riding, you start on the easier trails and you'll develop balance and an understanding of how to start building that skill level. And then once you have a certain skill level, typically you're not afraid when you're riding your bike. Certainly accidents happen and you could have a crash, but I rarely crash on my bike anymore. And when I am working on expanding my skill level, I'll be a little bit nervous on things, but I don't ride something unless I'm 100% sure that I'm going to be able to do it.
What's a trail that, like, how do you know that something is above your skill level? I'm assuming there's some sort of online database that has, like, this is for experts only or something like that.
There are trail ratings, but trail ratings can vary even within a trail system. So that's basically a general guideline. But usually you can tell just by looking at something. Like, even if you're out walking on the trail, if you looked at something on the trail and you thought, I don't know if I should be walking down that, that intuition, that feeling of, I don't know if I should be doing that, that's probably a sign that you probably shouldn't.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Do you remember, like, the moment where you first had your trail ride? I've heard stories of people just falling in love. Do you still get that same feeling of, like, euphoria even all these years later?
Yeah, for sure. Especially whenever I get to ride new trails and new places. And the adventure aspect is why I've been racing mountain bikes for 17 years. And what's kept me in the sport so long is because I just love riding my bike. And, you know, we've had a global pandemic and I've had a baby. And because of those things, I actually haven't raced my bike in 2 years. And I still consider myself a bike racer. I'm very excited about lining up. It'll probably be next season for my, you know, races again. But I just love riding my bike. And you'll hear these stories of, like, people who race for a number of years or Tour de France riders, and then they just quit after they're done racing because they've lost the love. So I think it's so important to always revisit the fun in what you're doing, no matter what you're doing.
And for you, the fun is just trying new trails. Would you say that that's how you're keeping it really exciting?
Trying new trails, but also there's always an opportunity to get better. And for me, growth is one of my number one values. And no matter how long you've been doing something, there's always room to improve. And also there's always room to get to know yourself better. And that's why I choose these ultra endurance events. Like, the races that I choose to do are 160K, 100 miles, or 7 days long, or 24 hours, because there is so much that happens over the course of an endurance event. And a range of human emotions that you experience that you might not experience without pushing yourself to that level.
Yeah, for sure. I find I'm generally a runner, but I've started to pick up a road bike. When I'm running, like, you know, your marathons, a half marathon, your mind is just elsewhere. Can that even happen when you're on the trail? Because you have to be so present. Or do you come back from a trail ride and just have, like, 100 business ideas, like all these things you're going to do for the podcast? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely have my best ideas when I'm out on my bike. And there are certain times where you have to be 100% present. And that's usually when you're pushing your ability level in terms of skill, or you're at an intensity level that is so hard to sustain. But for most of the time, like, we're not pushing our limits. For most of the time, we're doing a moderate to easy, you know, pace or skill level. So there is room for that brain to explore, or even room to work on just focus, like listening to the sound of the tires and just coming back to that sound over and over, or feeling the air on your skin and just trying to stay focused on that.
I love that concept of just listening to the tires. I think that's awesome. And I mean, you mentioned something of, like, having those easy training sessions. I think what really shocked me about being an athlete when I first started to get into fitness is you really, a lot of your training is quite moderate intensity and quite easy, just focusing on the aerobic capacity. As a mountain bike rider, is that kind of where you're focusing as well, having only a small percentage, be it 10 or 20 or 5, being very intense and the rest quite challenging, but not like, holy crap, this is the hardest thing I've done?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for building aerobic structure and function, you definitely want to be going at that easy to moderate pace. And I would say easy more, even more often than moderate. And the same goes, like, for cross-country skiing, for running, for lots of endurance sports. You need to have that huge aerobic base, and you need to continue training it. That way you can push harder whenever it's time to do that. But a huge mistake that most athletes make is they go out and they ride as hard as they can, or they run as hard as they can every single time. And that actually doesn't really help you get faster.
I know, it's so weird. I think it's a very paradigm shifting thing. Like, when you figure out, okay, I can run 10K, or I can bike for an hour and do 50Ks. And you're just like, what? But why can't I get better? But you're pushing yourself. And it's strange that the body needs these different, strategies to get faster. But you've had, obviously, recently, congratulations on having Bradley. Mm-hmm. How have you maintained time to still do the sport and do the thing you've loved, if at all, while having Bradley running around?
Yeah, I honestly couldn't have done it without the support of my husband, especially with the pandemic. That in Canada, things are pretty strict here, as like you still have to wear a mask inside, and it's September, and events aren't really going. So yeah, like when we talked about it as a family, like this is my career. And as soon as I was able to get back on my bike, I did. And my husband would take Bradley for a few hours a day, and he still does. And that's not the amount of training that I need to be at the top level, but it's enough to maintain a base level so that when we get the support that we need, which hopefully will be happening soon, some childcare, I'll be able to increase those hours, and I'll have that base so that I can build on top with the intensity and show up at a race, you know, ready to go. But it will take some time to build back that shock to the system, and it'll be a little bit humbling, but I know that I'll be able to get right back to where I was.
Is it frustrating that knowing you've lost quite a bit of fitness with all of that? Like, is you have to rebuild again, and do you feel like you've gone back to square one or two?
No, I don't feel like I've gone back to square one or two. Sometimes it's frustrating because I love doing the work. Like, that's my favorite thing, is doing the work. But I have so many other things going on in my life that bring me joy and identity. And I think that if I didn't do anything but ride my bike, it would be really hard to not be able to do that as much. But the break has also been really good for me. You know, like, I've been doing this for a long time, and it's made me appreciate it even more. And there's something really fun about rebuilding. And sure, it's frustrating. Like, I don't want anyone to think that it's not challenging. But to get to do that, like, it's really hard when you're at the top level to even make a 1% gain. But whenever you've lost a little bit of fitness, to gain that back and see improvements that happen relatively quickly is fun. And it's another personal challenge. Like, I love that personal challenge of figuring out, like, why am I doing this? Well, I'm not doing this for the results. And initially I was doing it for the results, but I'm doing it because it's something that brings me joy and I like the process.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you touched on something that's really powerful, and I think especially for athletes, because like you mentioned before, those Tour de France riders, they ride for a few years and they stop the sport. But what would be really hard is, you know, you associate your identity with this sport that you do, you know, your identity as a bike rider or a runner, and things can happen, like you might retire from the sport or you get an injury and now your identity has been taken away from you. Have you had any of that kind of experience?
I actually haven't. I mean, I've endured a few injuries and, you know, bumps along the way, but I've worked really hard to make sure that my self-worth doesn't come from being on a start line, and that's taken some time to get there. No, but there's just a lot of things that I love and a lot of things that I value, and understanding what those values are, your core values or whatever you want to call that, you can exercise those in so many different ways in your life. And that's kind of what makes up who you are. Identity is a thread underneath all the things that you do. But it takes a lot of personal work and thought, or like reading books or talking with a therapist or just talking to your friends, just to figure that part out. And that part is always going to be evolving too.
I love that. I think finding your values is definitely a key to not losing, I guess, what you think is your identity. But Bradley's growing up on, is he growing up on a plant-based diet?
Yeah. He's actually never had an animal product, not even in the womb.
That's amazing and awesome. Now, the thing that is on a lot of people's mind, and this is maybe we've touched on once on the podcast before, how much crap have you gotten for that?
You know what? I actually haven't gotten any. I'm trying to think in my pregnancy if I got any. I think there is a few questions in my pregnancy, but no one giving me a hard time, just like people curious. And no one is giving me a hard time about it. But I've been plant-based since 2013, and I regularly give people lots of information that is hopefully helpful for them in this realm. So no one's giving me a hard time. It might happen when my son starts going to school and that sort of thing. Yeah. But yeah, in general, just people are curious about it more than anything.
How are you exposing him to the world of food? Because I think with being, I guess, vegan or plant-based and having that diet, we have created this relationship with our food, a relationship of compassion and knowing that what you're feeding yourself is, you know, it's fostering something. You're either feeding yourself health or disease. And I think if we didn't have to relearn that as we discovered the plant-based diet, life would be very easy. How are you starting to have that conversation with him or developing some sort of relationship with food that's healthy?
I think at some point, you know, things like that will come up, but he's kind of too young to talk about like life and death and disease and all these things.
Of course.
But right now we're focused on, you know, this is healthy and this makes you feel good and those types of things. And this tastes good, but you know, we don't really talk about anything else. And then whenever we're reading him books, like it's so weird for all of us when we're little kids, like our stuffed animals are our friends and all the animals talk in the books and we watch cartoons and there's just like this cognitive dissonance that somehow comes into our life. Cause we don't, when you're a little kid, you don't realize if someone's putting cow or a chicken on your plate, that that's the same animal that you're eating, that you're reading about in the book.
Oh, for sure. And there is definitely a very high level of cognitive dissonance that you don't especially understand as a kid, let alone you don't even understand it as an adult. So I don't blame kids at all. Now, one of the big reasons people actually eat plant-based, and it's one of my core drivers, is climate change and the state of the environment. I found, as a parent, have you found that you've become more passionate about the climate or the environment because you have to foster this beautiful planet that we have for Bradley and his generation?
For me, it was something that was always on my mind long before I had Bradley. Like I actually used to be a solar engineer back before I was able to make it as a professional athlete. And one of the reasons that I love showing people that you can perform and be healthy and feel great on a plant-based diet is for health, but also for the environment. Honestly, if I think too much about it and my son, I get stressed out about what could happen in his life. And it's easy to think, well, what would happen if people didn't make these changes? So instead of really thinking too hard about that, I try and notice all the people out there who are trying and who are making positive changes and the growth that we've had and people who are, you know, more aware of the environment and trying to make these choices. And that makes me feel optimistic. But if I focus too hard on like, well, what would happen if they don't, then it's a little bit too hard for me to take because I really believe that leadership comes by leading by example and showing, not necessarily telling people what to do. And yeah, generally I feel optimistic and there's so many more people eating plant-based. There's so many more people who are hyper aware that the things that you eat, it's not just about recycling, which is important, you know, and doing these things and composting, but you need to be eating a certain way because the food that we eat comes from somewhere and the food that is grown is, I just can't believe how much food is grown to feed animals so that we can eat the animals. So there's just so much more awareness around this. And I think that it's moving in a positive direction.
Yeah, that's awesome that you feel that it's moving in a positive direction. I'm someone who's very thrown into the world and, you know, I read the IPCC reports and I do all that. And it's incredibly easy to, like you said, get really stressed out. I don't even have kids and I'm just like, what the hell are we doing? But at the end of the day, everything is shifting in the right direction, whether it's fast enough or not. That's a different conversation. But
yeah.
How do you... Because a lot of the times getting sucked into that negative framework is easy. Something that I've done is curate my social media feed to include more positive people. So I follow people like yourself, all these different people that, you know, they speak about health passionately and they speak about the climate passionately. What else have you done to, I guess, foster this healthy and positive relationship with the planet and within yourself?
Well, I think for me, you know, one of the things is I spend a lot of time outside as a mountain biker and as a runner. I'm always in the forest and I feel that energy. I know that might sound hippie, but I feel the energy out there and I'm deeply connected to that. And I've had the luxury of racing my bike all around the world in different climates, different places. So I feel that. But in terms of, you know, trying to be focused on the positive, it doesn't mean that a lot of people don't like the term positive thinking because they think that it means that you ignore all the other things going on and you don't acknowledge them. And it is important to acknowledge feelings of fear or anxiety or stress, but they don't have to become you. And, you know, knowing that those feelings are there helps you frame at things in a way so that you can have perspective, so that you can have appreciation for whenever things are going well. And there's a lot of things that you can do to train your mind so that you aren't so focused on negativity. And as humans, we are wired to have a negativity bias. That's why whenever we'll get 100 people say something nice about us and one person says something bad and you focus on the bad thing, it's to keep us safe. And that's what happened, you know, way back when. It was just to help keep us safe. But now we're biased towards that. So it's being aware of that bias and then being sure that you're spending time focusing on your daily wins, or like, that's why a gratitude practice works, is because when you start trying to look for those things that are going well in your life, then it just starts becoming the thing that you see everywhere. So it's just something that you have to work at every single day. And again, it doesn't mean ignoring all of the things that aren't going well, but it's how are you going to weight those things? And especially knowing that the hard things are going to be weighted unevenly compared to the good things.
Oh, of course. And just, I think it comes down to, well, firstly, I want to address the fact that I think being out in a forest and feeling that connection isn't hippie. I don't know what it is, but it's fascinating because if you look at some of the most passionate ocean conservationists, they're all surfers. Like, it's you create this connection with what you feel and your passion and your love. So I think there's something more than just you ride a lot of bikes, so you're passionate about the environment, because without the environment, there wouldn't be any trails. There's something about it, and we know that there's fresher air. We know that there's certain pheromones that these plant releases that affects us. So I'm going to call you out. It's not hippie. It's where it's at.
Perfect. Yeah, and also, you know, going back to that comment about cognitive dissonance, like if you never spend time in nature, then you really don't understand like what nature is. So yeah, I think it's really important. And then there's some really interesting research actually about depression. And green space, and just simply viewing a green space out your window, or like I'm looking out the window now, I see like a beautiful cliff with moss on it and trees growing out. Not everybody has that luxury of looking out their window and seeing a beautiful nature, but even looking at a picture of nature actually decreases incidences of depression and helps people have coping. And so it's really interesting how that actually helps us. And something that I found so interesting about eating a plant-based diet is that everything sort of goes in a circle. Like if we treat the environment and we treat animals and we treat ourselves with respect, then things start working out for us. Like we're healthier because of it. The world is healthier because of it. The planet is healthier because of it. And if we do things that cause harm to others and to the planet, it ends up harming us too. So it's everything is so connected, and we often forget about that too.
Oh, for sure. And it can be connected in the most subtle ways. Like if you think about people who, like, I was going for a walk yesterday, I see someone having a smoke and just littering that. And I'm thinking, I'm out here doing the best I can and someone's just thrown a cigarette on the ground. And of course, that can instill a lot of frustration and anger. You're like, oh, I just want to grab that person and just be like, what are you doing, mate? Come on. But I think, you know, he might not be following, say, a plant-based diet. He might not feel good about himself. And so why should someone care about the planet when they don't feel good about themselves? So, you know, having a plant-based diet offer this level of health and happiness and joy. Oh, I don't have to feel sluggish all the time. Oh, I can have energy as a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old or a 60-year-old or beyond. It offers a whole new perspective on the planet that I think is a very important point that you raised.
Yeah, and also, you know, you mentioned earlier, like surrounding yourself with positive people. Like if that person is somebody that is surrounding themselves with people who are littering and, you know, have a negative mindset and don't take care of themselves, and that just becomes a norm to them. And something is like, to us, seeing someone throw a cigarette butt, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they did that. But to them, it's like a zero, because that's just the norm for them. So that's why it's so important to set a positive example for people like that. Because they might not be exposed to it at all. And they might not even realize they're doing it half the time.
It's almost become habitual. And I like that perspective because it makes you feel a lot more compassion, and almost, you almost feel sorry for them, because if you're doing this, you know, how do you treat yourself and your mind? And I guess it really almost forces you with perspective to be the bigger person. And when you have that compassion, that's when you can really lead by example. Like, I think when we're talking about plant-based diets, it's hard for a vegan to have a lot of compassion for other people. Yes, for the animals is fine because the animals don't do anything bad, really. But having it for other people, I think, is a huge key in how we can drive change.
Yeah, if you want to change the world, it's especially important to have compassion for people who have different viewpoints than you. And right now, like, the world is so polarized and everything is so black and white for a lot of people. And it makes it really difficult to have conversations or even just like build a camaraderie. Even if somebody doesn't even move in the direction that you want them to move, it's just about trying to understand somebody. And sometimes when people just feel heard and understood, then they might be more willing to listen to what you have to say. But it's so easy when you're so passionate about something or you're like, how could you be doing that? Like, this is obvious to me. That person just might not be coming at it. They might not have the same education level as you. They might not have the same exposures and experiences in their life. And they might not just be that down the path as far as you. But maybe, you know, someday they will be. And you're just one of the experiences they have that moves them in the right direction, even though it doesn't push them over the edge that day.
Yeah, I love that. I think it really, and it's something you have to exercise a lot and practice a lot, because I'm still going to sometimes have those moments of judgment, like, come on, like, really? And I'm sure you do as well. But I think it's just like mindset. I mean, you talk about mindset a lot. Mindset isn't, you got a good mindset, like, you're good, like, you've won. It's something you have to always work on.
Yeah, compassion doesn't mean that you don't have feelings or thoughts of judgment for somebody else. It's what you do with those judgments and thoughts and how and if you act on them. That's where you can exercise compassion and try to understand where that person might be coming from.
Yeah, I love it. Do you know, like, do you have the self-awareness of, I have a good mindset right now? Like, obviously, I just said, you're never going to get to a spot, in my opinion, of the absolute pinnacle of mindset, like the G-O-D, like, you are it. How do you know if you're on the right track to having a good mindset about whatever it is?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, because it's not about getting to a point. Like, it's never about achieving some outcome. It's about daily actions. And it's about, like, trying to always be learning about yourself and asking yourself, like, hey, am I doing my best for what I have today? And what my best is today might be really different than what my best was 5 years ago or yesterday. And just showing up for yourself and giving yourself that chance, and then trying not to have judgment around it if you aren't as good as you were the day before. Like, there will be days where you feel like crap and days where you are anxious and where you're not going to be able to just ninja mindset yourself into, you know, everything being all good. And that's okay too. Those are the most important learning points, points of tension and points of fear. Those are also a useful thing as long as they don't get too out of hand.
Yeah, I mean, something that's really, I think, impactful for a lot of people, especially, I think, with athletes in particular, but I think with anyone, everyone, in my experience, is on some sort of scale. I'm wondering if you also experience, like, you've got all these national titles, all these amazing races that you've completed. Do you still have some level of imposter syndrome?
Sure. Actually, when you say, oh, you've won the national titles, like, I've been world champion. When I hear that, I'm like, there's like a weird like disconnect, like, oh yeah, I did do that, but that's not me. Like, I did that, but that's not me. And I
really,
yeah. And I almost think that's a good thing, that I believe that's not me, because it helps me stay connected to who I am instead of what I've achieved.
I love that. But also, do you feel like that's not claiming what you've achieved, but it's also, in a way, you're not attached to that identity?
Yeah, I mean, I have achieved those things, and I think it's good to celebrate your successes in the moment, and that's something that I've worked on. But like, that result that you have or you did, like, that's not for, I mean, it's something you achieve forever, but that's not forever you. And there's gonna be many other people who are gonna come along and achieve those things too. And I think it could be easy to get to, like, I think that's where like entitlement comes from, or like having too big of an ego comes from, is like you get stuck on that. Well, I'm this, so I'm better than you. And that was just a day that you had where everything came together, and it was a celebration of all of your hard work. But there's going to be a lot of other days like that too in your life, and days where you celebrate other people.
Yeah, I love that. And I love especially celebrating other people. I think that's incredible because you of all people, and when you've achieved something, you know how much hard work goes into that. And I've never understood putting other people down, like, no, that title's mine or that time is mine or whatever it is. So I think it's really humbling to know that there's people out there, especially national champions, that are like, no, if you achieve that, like, amazing work.
Yeah, and competition makes you better. I mean, if you go to an event, like, some people are excited whenever the competition isn't good because it might make the win easier for them, but the meaning behind it is so much more because you will get so much more out of yourself if there's people there who are better than you. And maybe you have a day where, like, you performed at your absolute best and everything came together and you maybe won on the day when you never thought you could. Like, that means so much more to you. Or maybe you even came, like, you didn't win. Like, some of my races I've done that I'm most proud of aren't ones that I've won. It's ones where I got the most out of myself. And I've had days with, like, races I've won and I walk away and I feel unsatisfied because I know that I didn't get the best out of myself that day.
That's so fascinating to hear, but I guess it all comes down to internal satisfaction. In terms of, like, mindset, and when you're looking at going into these races, have you thought about how much you attribute your success to, let's say, mindset as opposed to, like, preparation and training and the physical torture you put yourself in for the months and years upcoming?
I mean, your mind is something that is also part of the training. And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't think about, is that you're training your mind every single day, and you can be intentional about it. There's lots of things you can actually do. I actually have a course that I designed last year just specifically because I think it's so important for people to know how to train their mind. Because if you wait till race day to start training things like resilience, confidence, you know, all these things, like how to set a goal, that's not going to work out for you. You have to practice. You have to front load these skills. But yeah, I think that when it comes down to ultra endurance events specifically, when people might quit whenever it gets hard, like really hard, if the weather is really bad or they have, you know, something happen and now they think that they don't have a chance, I think having a weak mindset, that is where somebody can excel over you if they've trained their mind. But you need to train the physical side of things as well. You can't just, like, be somebody who's really positive and really mentally tough and go out. It's that little bit of difference. Everybody's going to be pretty close at the top level from a physical preparation standpoint. I think that the extra thing that gets you to that finish line quicker is your mind.
Yeah, I love that. And obviously we have to be working on our mind all the time. Have you found that working on your mindset for fitness and endurance racing and all these different things kind of correlates to working on your mindset in every other aspect of life, be it business or general life things or conversations, relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why people love sports so much, is it's a microcosm for the rest of our life. And we build confidence and efficacy by looking back at the things that we did and saying, like, I've done that, so now I feel like I'm capable of more. And I think that looking back at some of our physical pursuits can give us confidence in all these other areas of our lives.
I love that. I think that's incredibly important because, you know, everything has almost lessons within lessons, and it's all kind of connected, much like food. And let's switch gears to food for a second. Are you generally subscribed to a whole foods plant-based diet?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's the odd time where, like, I'll eat granola out of a box or whatever, but yeah, for the most part, we eat a whole foods plant-based diet. Occasionally I'll have, like, a treat or whatever, you know, a plant-based treat. But yeah, I feel the best whenever I eat whole foods.
Yeah. I love that you're not super strict with that. Like, you acknowledge, like, yes, I'm my best at whole foods. And you can feel it. For anyone who's tried going on a whole foods diet, like, we generally follow, like, 80, maybe 90% whole foods. And then we have a pizza. And then we're like, oh, that didn't, like, sit super fantastic with me.
Yeah. Or, like, just the way the food looks when it's not whole foods, you're like, oh, like, this isn't very colorful. Yeah. And then you just feel different, but that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy it and have a treat every now and then.
Oh, for sure. Do you wash your fruits and veg and stuff when you buy it?
I do now. I used to not for a long time. And I was like, yeah, I'm punk rock. I'm not washing my stuff. And I'm like, I'm just being dumb. You know, it doesn't take, I don't use, like, soap, But yeah, I make sure that I kind of rinse everything off more because, I mean, we don't always buy organic, but we do the best we can because it's expensive and, you know, it's not accessible for everybody. But just think about the people touching it and like it's sitting on the checkout belt. And I don't use the little plastic bags for my produce because I just don't want to use all that extra plastic. But it's like, yeah, it's just sitting everywhere. So I at least like to rinse it because I think about like, oh, what did that touch?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a funny, there was an interesting study that was done and they found that water, just plain water, not like EnviroWash or any one of those, gets rid of anywhere between 50 and 80% of all germs and pesticides. But where I was going with my question is when we're talking about the brightness of foods, I genuinely have some sort of fetish between washing the foods and then looking at how bright and colorful and vivid. Like if it didn't look good before, it just looks incredible after you wash it.
Yeah, water, I mean, even after you drink water, like if you drink a lot of water, like your skin looks better. And yeah, I actually have a funny side story, rambling, but a friend of mine, a new friend, like we just moved to a new town. So it's been great because we were meeting lots of new people and making friends. And I'm not somebody who's shy about my age. Like I think we should be proud of our age. And I think we should be proud of like society makes aging look terrible. And like, you should try to just like lie. So like, I'm 38. I just turned 38. And I told my friend that and she's like, what? Like, I thought you were my age. And she's 33. Like, how can you be 38? What's your secret? And I was like, honestly, I think it's exercise and eating a whole foods plant-based diet. And I really believe that.
On the topic of water as well, do you drink any like coffees or stimulants or things like that?
I do love espresso. I drink one Americano per day. So I'm not like crazy, you know, drinking tons of caffeine. I would like to, but I know that's not good for me. So I keep it at one a day.
Oh, for sure. I think if I ever go out, because I don't drink alcohol really, like maybe once a year, if I go out and I know it's gonna be late, one like 1 a.m 2 a.m I'll just have a coffee at like 5 p.m I'm good. Do you find that it's like affected your sleep, or do you use it like a pre-training kind of thing, or now it's like more like a habit, you enjoy the taste?
It's something I just enjoy the taste. I drink it in the morning. There will be the odd time where I'll drink it before a workout if it's a really hard workout, because caffeine is actually a legal ergogenic aid. And it actually does improve endurance performance. So sometimes I'll use caffeine to improve my performance. But generally, I just really love the taste of a really nice coffee. And it's just like a nice like ritual that I like.
It's really soothing, especially because you can look out your window, have that beautiful view with a mug in your hand. You know, one of those hug mugs, those big ones. I was going to say, like, with coffee, what I find interesting is, especially when you said it's good for endurance, and like, I get it, because when you look at like the gels, they always have like 50 micrograms of caffeine or whatever it is. But when I think about coffee, I'm thinking generally we know that there's a spike and we know that there's a drop. So I find it fascinating that it's good for endurance, because you're going to spike, and if you drop and you're still working out, it's going to like really bum you out.
Yeah, I haven't read the research recently as to how exactly it works. It was just, I was reading about like how, or the reason why it's an ergogenic aid. So like, it decreases your perceived exertion and it helps free up more sugar in your blood. I did read that you need to keep slow dripping the caffeine into your system. You don't have to have a lot, but like those gels, like you can get caffeine free gels, and I usually use caffeine free gels in my training. But for race day, sometimes I'll use caffeinated gels, and it's like maybe one per hour. So you don't need a ton if you're going to use it for performance.
Do you ever use gels for training?
I do sometimes, if I'm doing a harder workout. It's important to be training, like keeping your gut trained. Like if you're going to be eating these things in a race, you want to be eating them whenever you're out training, because then your body's used to it. And a big mistake that people make with gels is they don't drink water with them, and you need to drink water to help digest it. Otherwise it's going to start your body will pull water out of your cells to digest, to try to digest the sugar. And then that's going to severely dehydrate you. And I've had to learn that one the hard way.
Oh no. Well, I guess I love that concept. Don't try anything new on race day. I think it's when I see people try new shoes on race day for like running, I'm like, what are you doing? It's too risky. Do you count like your macros or micros or amino acids or anything like that?
No, I actually don't. I mean, I've done the odd check here and there. And when I've done it, it's like, yeah, everything looks really good. I just try and eat a whole foods plant-based diet. And whenever I do that, everything seems to work out just fine.
I love that. I love how you can just trust, because I was looking at, I've recently started tracking on Chronometer just to see, because I've never tracked before. I'm like, I just want to see if I'm missing anything. And mm-hmm. I ate a kiwi and I put a kiwi and I'm like, my God, this fruit has everything I need. And it's it's strange how you think, the perception I think for a lot of people is there's something missing in plants. And I was on an interview another day and I said, you know, it's not that meat has something plants don't have. It's plants have something meat doesn't have, which is your things like polyphenols, and there's lots of nutrients that are so vital.
Yeah, and I think the biggest mistake that people make when they're thinking about macros, or obviously people are worried about protein who are, you know, trying to eat a plant-based diet. As long as you're eating enough calories and you're eating a well-rounded, like if you're just eating salad all day, that's probably not going to work for you as an endurance athlete. But as long as you're eating like grains and legumes, like whole grains and legumes, and, you know, all these different delicious vegetables, and maybe you're having some soy products, like that's you're definitely going to be getting enough protein. It's when you don't eat enough calories, or you're not eating a balanced diet that's not well planned, that's where you might not be getting enough of that.
Mm, yeah, totally agree. What other fields do you think people go really wrong at when looking at like health, training, or nutrition?
I think people rely on supplements too much. I mean, there are certain supplements, especially if you're eating a plant-based diet, that you need that aren't that big of a deal. I mean, people listening to this podcast probably already know them. You know, B12, everybody pretty much, if you live north of Atlanta, you need vitamin D. And let's see, I take a marine-based DHA because not everybody converts ALA to EPA and DHA well. But most of the stuff you can get from food. And even if plant-based or not, like I think people rely too heavily on supplements because they want to take a magic pill to make them feel better, when really it's the food that you eat. As long as you're eating high-quality food, that's going to make you feel the best.
Oh, for sure. I wonder if we're trained by like the pharmaceutical industry, because they've done a lot for humankind, I guess, if we're trained, because they sell everything as like a magic pill, and now supplements have kind of somehow entered that box of you need this, as opposed to a supplement is something that supplements a diet.
Well, a pill is so much easier to take than actually doing the real work. And that's why a lot of times, like some doctors actually know that a whole foods plant-based diet can help reverse certain diseases that their patients have. And I've actually asked these doctors, well, why don't you tell them? And they say, because I know they won't do it. I know that they would rather just take a pill because that's easier. But really, like taking a pill, it might seem easier in the moment, but there's so many different side effects that can happen. Mm. And it's not actually making you better. It's just masking your symptoms.
I know. The band-aid approach is pretty hectic, and it's something that really plagues all of humanity, because we're just trained to love, we want the easy way, right?
Yeah. And I mean, there are times where you do need to take supplements, or you do need to take prescription drugs. I'm not saying that you should never take those things, but oftentimes we default to that before we say, hey, like, what else can I do?
Yeah, absolutely. Is there something that you used to do like on the early days, maybe in your training or in your career, that you were doing, you're like, this is the best thing for me? And then later you looked at yourself and you're like, why in the world would I do that?
Yeah, I think I used to overtrain. And I think that this is a huge thing that happens for most endurance athletes. Like, I don't think that endurance athletes, even at the elite level, need to train as many hours as they think. And whenever, now that you can like see if people are uploading their workouts on like Strava or whatever, people see other people, you know, doing 15 hours a week, 20 hours a week, 25 hours a week, and then they think that they need to do that too. And there are certain times where you do need to do bigger volume, but generally I think that people don't need to train quite as many hours as they're doing. And I train less hours than I used to. And I actually got faster when I started doing that. And I had people sending me messages like, hey, how come you don't train like as much as some of the other people? And it's not about quantity, it's about quality of the training. Some people actually do have the bandwidth it's about stress and recovery. So like if you can recover from those efforts and you have the time and you also find the joy in putting in those types of hours, then that's great. But most people don't have the bandwidth in their lives. They have other things going on in their life, or maybe just from a physiological perspective, they can't recover from that type of thing. So that's actually going to make you slower if you can't recover. But a lot of times it's like, if I'm doing lots of hours, then I'm a good athlete, I'm a good person. And that's not going to really be the right gauge of that. But a lot of times we feel that way.
Oh, for sure. And I think it also comes with the glorification of, I guess, the hustle culture, or like, you know, I work 100-hour weeks. Like I forgot to sleep for 3 days. Like I think it's comes down to like comparing yourself to other people. especially as an athlete, because if you've been training for a year and you're comparing yourself to someone who's been training for 10 years, it's like you're literally setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, there's a quote I like. It's don't compare your start to someone else's middle. But I also would say don't compare your middle to somebody else's middle, because you have no idea where they came from, what they've done their entire life leading up to that. Like, just do your best and focus on you and focus on making yourself happy. And somebody else's success shouldn't take away from your own happiness. But comparison is tough. It's right in front of our faces every single second of every single day. And I think just being aware when you're comparing yourself and then noticing how you feel is a good step just to realize it. Because nobody is immune to that. All of us are going to do it. But the awareness around it and knowing like when to close your social media for the day, or knowing when to put yourself around people where, you know, you feel like they're going to love you no matter what, not because you're achieving something or you look a certain way, I think is a great antidote to that.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And obviously being a pro athlete, there's people out there that would compare themselves to you. What would you say to those people?
I'd say you probably, like, you haven't seen what I've done behind the scenes either, and focus on just being the best version of yourself again. And pro athletes compare themselves to other pro athletes. It happens all the time. And just focus on doing your best and feeling good about yourself based on your own effort. It's about being proud of your effort and just reminding yourself of that over and over and over. What somebody else does shouldn't affect what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, I can't have you on here and not talk about mountain biking, because I think I'd tee a lot of people off. You're like, you guys are little and you didn't do this. Now, when we're looking at beginners, so someone looking to start out, and there's a lot of people on here like myself who might not have ever picked up a mountain bike, but sees the lifestyle of as an opportunity to maybe get out in the trails and maybe be present, be away from their devices or whatever their reasoning may be, maybe to fall in love with fitness. What tips do you have for people to really get into it, whether it's the training aspect, the mindset, the gear, anything?
I think number one is to focus on fun, because it can be so hard, especially as adults, to pick up a new skill or a new sport, go out and just be so disappointed or so frustrated because you're not immediately good at it. So enjoy the process of working at things and knowing that you're always going to be working at it. Find other people to go with, because it can be hard to get into something by yourself. It's also expensive. Like, there are places where you can rent bikes so that, and there are places in other countries actually that provide, especially third world countries, that can provide, access to things like this. And there's a organization called World Ride that helps, actually helps women get access to bikes in these third world countries. But anyway, yeah, just go to your local bike shop, or if you see somebody out on the trail, like, or your neighbor, just ask them and go with them and just have fun. But make sure that the person you're going with isn't there to show off, because a lot of times you'll go ride with somebody and they'll just go ride as hard as they can and they leave you in the dust, and that's really not fun. That happened to me the first time that I went mountain biking. So yeah, just make sure that you go on like a no drop ride. No drop means nobody gets left behind, and just try to have fun and look at the adventure, and just know that you're going to get better no matter what if you keep showing up.
I love that. I think it's important to definitely look into the fun, because, you know, we talk about sustainability with the environment and with our diet, but it definitely comes to what you're doing as a sport as well.
Yeah, and I think it's so important to explore curiosity. Like, I didn't grow up mountain biking. I started mountain biking when I was
12. Thought you were born, no. and then from the womb you brought your own mountain bike that you had crafted in there.
No, I started mountain biking when I was 20, and if I had never had that curiosity and just explored that curiosity, my life would look completely different. Like, I've been able to race in 25 plus countries. I've been a world champion. I've been national champion multiple times. Like, I've made relationships that I never, like, just my life, I met my husband through mountain biking. Like, it doesn't have to be mountain biking, but if there's something that you're curious about that you want to try and you're too afraid because you don't know what's going to happen, or you might get hurt, or you know, whatever the reason, like, that thing that you might just be curious about could change your life completely. So explore your curiosities.
Yeah, I totally love that. What is it like now? That's like the beginner side of things. What would you say it takes to be a pro athlete in your field?
It takes consistency and showing up for yourself. But also, I think that something that doesn't get talked about very often is learning how to deal with setbacks and losses, because it can be so easy to show, like, a lot of people will show potential right away, and then there's all this buzz about how great this person's going to be, And then they end up quitting because they don't, quote, you know, get these results right away because it's hard. And there's going to be years where you might be doing amazing. And then there's going to be years where you're not doing as amazing. And it's important in those years not to give up, and to just keep showing up for yourself and having compassion for yourself. And one way to do that is to stop focusing so much on yourself. So like learning how to help other people on their journey will help you get out of your own head, and it might help you get even faster.
Yeah. And then like, what other trainings did you do to do that? Because obviously a pro athlete and yourself, you don't, I'm assuming you don't bike ride. Like there's other concepts of what you need to do to be a healthy individual. What other trainings do you do, I guess? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the person and what type of season. Like a lot of people like to get into the gym. I don't really like to do that, but I'll do like body weight, mobility work, that kind of thing. Recently I've started trail running a lot. So this has been something that it took a lot of courage to explore. This is a curiosity that I have, because I actually started as a runner before I was a mountain biker, and I ran a marathon when I was 18 and 19. Wow. And I kind of missed that. So I thought, I'm going to get a trail running coach. And so now I actually trail run 3 to 4 days a week. And that's actually helped my cycling. It's helped mentally keep the sport fresh and remind me how much I love mountain biking. But it's also made me stronger on my bike. And it was really scary to not ride my bike 6 days a week and to try something different with my training. But it's going well so far.
Oh, that's awesome how you took the plunge. Because I think for a lot of, especially yourself, you know, having done mountain biking for so long, it's like, what would my life be like if I didn't train 6 days a week and I tried something new? Like, were you scared that you were going to lose some of the technical or physical skills involved with biking if you started running?
I wasn't worried about the technical skills, but I was worried, like, what if I, you know, lose the endurance, the specific endurance for the bike? But that hasn't happened. If I had a huge event coming up, I would be shifting into more, you know, more on the bike for probably like 3 to 4 weeks leading into the event. But it's been great having this other sport that I'm doing and a different community that I can plug into. And it's helped keep the bike fresh for me.
Do you find that one is harder than the other?
Well, something that you haven't been doing as much is going to feel harder. Like trail running feels harder because I'm not as good at it. And where I live, it's incredibly technical. So I've had some pretty good falls. And with trail running, you don't have time, like, especially here, you don't have time to put your hands out when you fall. You're just like, bam, on the ground. So that's been hard. But it's also been fun because the downhill trail running here, it's like a completely different sport. And getting to learn those technical skills and build up on that, just like I did on my mountain bike. Like you asked at the beginning, like, how do you know if something's too hard? I was like, trail running, if I look at like basically a huge rock slab down the side of a mountain, I know I'm probably not ready to run down that. But I can work on smaller things so that one day I can be ready to do that. And to see that kind of improvement is really fun too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love how you can really just take the plunge into another sport, which is something I think a lot of people need to do more, especially when it comes to sustainable fitness. Like you touched on before, just having that fun aspect and keeping it fresh is really important. How would you define what a healthy person is?
I mean, I think that's going to look different for everybody, but like I'm a health coach as well. Like I went to, did some university level graduate training last year to become a health coach. And there's actually a board certification I'm working towards. So I'm excited about that. But health is so much more than just eat, sleep, and exercise. It's about your relationships. It's about your personal environment. It's about a connection to something bigger than you. So just like even looking at yourself and with curiosity and excitement, and just analyzing different areas of your life, saying like, hey, how do I feel here? And how can I improve that? Like if you're just always kind of looking, accepting who you are today, but also looking for ways to optimize. I just want to make sure that it's not like you're never enough and you always have to be getting better. It's like, you are enough with who you are today and you're awesome for who you are today. But exploring yourself is one of the best journeys and it's something that never ends. So I think that health comes with exploration and also surrounding yourself with really great people.
Yeah, I'm gonna withdraw a bit more wisdom from you with this last question as we're coming to the tail end. I like to leave people with a bit of a chance to speak their mind and in this kind of format of their words of wisdom. It could be something about what we talked about today. It could be something completely off the track, pun intended, but the platform is all yours to speak your mind, Sonia.
Honestly, well, here's two questions you can ask yourself that I think are really important that have just been on my mind. I have a newsletter I send out every Monday, so I'm always thinking about like different things. So here it is. It's, how do you want to feel versus what do you want to achieve? And are those two things in alignment?
Can you repeat that?
How do you want to feel versus what do you want to achieve? And are those two things in alignment? Because, and I'll elaborate. A lot of times we think that we're going to feel a certain way if we achieve more or if we like achieve things faster, but that actually isn't how we want to feel a lot of the time. Because if you are on this treadmill, and I've been there lots of times, if you're on this treadmill of achievement and like you're just trying to get to this place so you can feel good, you're not going to feel good when you get there. There's just going to be another mountain to climb. So just being really aware of how you want to feel today and realizing that achieving more, so it might help you get to that feeling, but it might not. And it helps you make choices as to what you say yes to.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to kind of lessen your almost sadness or feeling of insecurity or not enough, because you're congruent with your values, what you want, and you're not setting yourself up for unrealistic expectations of I'll only be happy when, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you are loved and you are lovable regardless of what you achieve. And that's something I always have to work on. I grew up feeling like if I wasn't achieving something, then I wasn't lovable. So just always reminding yourself that you are perfect the way that you are and you are lovable and achieve, like the people that are important in your life, like if you do something that's impressive, that shouldn't change how much they love you.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. Look, I'll leave all the links to connect with you, including your website. So if someone wants to talk to you about coaching, you've got amazing blogs there. You've got all the information. You've also got your Instagram, your YouTubes, your podcast, of course, that everyone can check out, the Sonia Looney Show. I like to finish all my episodes with a bit of a thank you based on how this conversation went and meeting you and whatnot. And for you, you know, you're someone who's very congruent and consistent, much like your training. I think a lot of the time in this world, we can meet people that are not very, like they speak a lot, but they don't walk the talk. And I think with you, I really appreciate the fact that you're straightforward, but you're not misleading people to a point where saying you should do this, but I'm not going to do it because I am of a superior level or whatever that complex may be. So, you know, I thank you for being not only that congruent person and being authentic, but also for going out there and talking about the plant-based diet and how that impacts performance. I know you've been interviewed a lot, and just helping people transition to a plant-based diet can really change the environment in which we're in. It could change the state of the current climate emergency. It can change the future generation that we leave this planet to. So I really thank you for being outspoken and being a figure in that space that is influencing people to make better choices about their health. And of course, I thank you for coming on and sharing your words of wisdom to the Plant Paradigm community.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Hi there. Welcome to the end of the episode. Thank you for listening the whole way through. I really appreciate it. Thank you once again to Sonia for coming on and sharing this conversation. I think it's incredibly important, and I took a lot away from it, especially the mindset. At the end of the day, it is the core of who we are, and we need to make sure we're taking care of that. We on the show, we love to eat a great diet. Whole foods, plant-based, that's very, very clean. We love to exercise, but it's time to not forget to exercise our mindset and make sure that we're working it out, make sure we believe in ourselves so that we can do whatever we want. And so to sum it up, mindset matters. If you got value out of this episode, one of the best ways you can help is by sharing it around to your friends, family members, other athletes, be them plant-based or not. If you want to hear more from Sonia, I've left all the ways to connect with her in the show notes below. And of course, I've left all the ways you can connect with us. If you'd like a monthly newsletter with all the new things happening in the plant-based world and this podcast, feel free to jump over to our website, theplantparadigm.com, leaving your name and email address, and you'll get that email once a month. No spam, purely information on the environment and how we can help it, including things about veganism, health, science, new documentaries we're watching, and everything in between. But that is all from me today. I'll see you guys on the next episode. Stay happy, eat plants, peace.